This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 568, brought to you by Bombas. For the most comfortable socks you will ever wear, visit getbombas.com/ifanboy and save 20% off your first order of four or more pairs, plus free shipping. And iFanboy listeners like you...
Son of a bitch! Give me a drink! Another night! I just can't be me! Son of a bitch! If I drink it clean, I'm gonna drink my life away.
Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 568. I am Josh Flanagan. I am with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And as we are recording, nothing else that I care about is going on in the world right now. We are iFanboy, and every week we read our stack of comics, and one of us picks their favorite book, and we call that the Pick of the Week. We talk about the book, that book, other books, some books, magazines, comics, floppies. We don't call them that. The Patreon pick, and if we have some time, we even read some listener mail or voicemails. There might even be ratings. It's a good ratings. It's a good time. It's so like nowhere in my life can I hear the word ratings without at least
it's completely overwhelmed the definition of the word. Yeah.
Here's your spoiler warning. There will be spoilers. It is a review show. We will have spoilers. So any of the books that we talk about may or may not be spoiled. So that's your warning. Ron, you had the pick this week.
I did. And this week, I feel like it's every week we're talking. We're in a mode of, oh my God, there are so many books. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm regularly back into the between 20 and 30 books per week. So. So narrowing down a book to read can be a daunting challenge. Narrowing down a book to be the pick, that is. Yeah.
And yet there's still, can't believe you didn't read this. There's so many books.
Right. Exactly.
So many books.
But so what I thought was interesting about this week was that there was a lot of books that that I enjoyed that were, you know, that were, there were some number ones, there were some, you know, some events. We had a little smattering, a little everything this week. But really, when I finished reading all my books and then I walked away from it, I slept on it. And then the next day I was like, well, what book did I enjoy the most reading? And I just got to tip my hat to Terry Moore, because Motor Girl number 3 kept on coming back to my brain. And for longtime listeners of iFanboy will know that I'm as big of a Terry Moore fan as it gets. Strangers in Paradise is one of my all-time favorite comic books ever. And I've enjoyed his work after he wrapped up Strangers, although he's returning back to it, which I'm still mixed feelings about that. You know, I enjoyed Echo, Rachel Rising, I enjoyed, I continued to purchase, did not finish reading it yet, but I will someday, but definitely supported his work. And now Motor Girl is his latest series. And what just struck me, like, this is the third issue, it's a new series. It's not like there's any big revelation or any kind of,
big things happened in this issue.
No, but I mean, but it's not like a, I mean, this is truly I mean, we talk about the overwhelming preponderance of superheroes in mainstream comics and a type of comic. And we've talked on the show recently in the past couple of months about how the independent, you know, black and white comic scene is nearly dead. And if it wasn't for people like Terry Moore who are continuing to carry that flag. I mean, Motor Girl is black and white, completely written, drawn, lettered by him. If it wasn't for people like Terry Moore, as well as a very, very small population of independent comic creators who are selling, you know, still photocopying books at Kinko's and selling them at cons and things like that and doing stuff on the internet. But, you know, this category of comics would all be gone if it wasn't for them. So I'm glad that Terry Moore is still, you know, is still doing his thing. And he does it in – and what struck me with Motor Girl, specifically Motor Girl number 3, is that Terry Moore has an innate ability to balance out-of-this-world comical cartooning with sometimes really personal, real emotions and feelings and heavy stuff.
We're going to have a show that comes out later this week. We talk about Stuart Immonen and how great he is and how he may be the best artist in comics. But I think we forget about Terry Moore.
Yeah.
Simply because he's not on the radar as much. But reading this issue, I was like, oh, right. There's no one currently who is better than Terry Moore at what he does.
Doing this, like cartooning a single personal story. And not personal, but I mean, but, you know, like, you know, doing, you know, he's just doing everything. It's all coming from his brain. And it's got enough of the little bits of his own uniqueness that he brings to the page in terms of whether it's a ridiculous premise of a woman who's a war veteran who clearly has something wrong with her and that she has an imaginary gorilla friend who she talks to.
It's her coping mechanism from the what she went through being captive in the war. Yeah. I don't think it's ridiculous. That part is not the ridiculous part of the story.
Well, yeah.
but just to stay with the art. I mean, the way he paces a page out, the way he paces a joke out from panel to panel. I think. He's, you know, his character acting, I don't think he's matched in terms of being able to, as you said, tell a personal story while also do action and humor, and his character work is just wonderful.
Yeah, and I'm hard pressed to tell you what Motor Girl is about, and yes, it's about this girl who, you know, is a veteran and has a coping mechanism where she's talking to a gorilla, but it's also about aliens.
Well, that's the ridiculous part, and we talked about issue 1. You were not on the show. We talked about issue 1. We didn't talk about issue 2. So, what is her name? Motor Girl.
Motor Girl?
Samantha.
Yeah.
Samantha. I didn't even know her name was Samantha. Samantha.
Angela.
Mona.
Jonathan.
Jonathan. So,
Jonathan.
Oh, God. She works at a junkyard, basically.
Mona.
In Nevada. And in addition to her imaginary gorilla friend, she's been seeing aliens. She had a visit with some aliens in the first issues. And we got a sense in the second issue that the aliens weren't real.
When she thought she was fueling the ship and she's just watering when Libby, the owner of the junkyard, showed up and there's no alien ship there.
She was washing down their ship, and then we cut to a long shot and there's no ship there. So we're like, okay, so she's really hallucinating all this stuff. But then in this issue, the thugs that are trying to get her off her land, one of them is abducted by aliens. So clearly it's not all in her head, and that's the interesting thing about it. That's why I think this was a quote-unquote big issue, because something big did happen in that we see, okay, well, at least there are some aliens out there.
Right, and I think that
that was a great sequence when he was abducted. I loved that page. That page is fantastic.
Well, that page was great, and honestly, the page to me that sung was when she's working in the junkyard taking apart a car, and she's standing on top of it with a chainsaw, and she's having an argument with the ape about Jazz and Charlie Parker and Miles Davis, and all that. Like, that page just, like, that page exists on its own. Like, it's independent of what the story's going on. Like, there's just so much life to that. And then also a couple pages later on, you know, the thugs that are trying to get her off her land, they try to kidnap her, and it's becoming, you know, Terry Moore does a great job of the comedic bumbling types. Yes. He did that a lot in Strangers in Paradise. You know, it came up a little bit in Echo, but like where the antagonists are really like you get a lot of humor from their failed attempts, right?
That page I'm thinking of specifically when I'm talking about the way he paces out a page, there's that silent panel in the middle, and it looks at first glance to be a really busy page, but the way it reads is really fantastic.
Right.
And also when she recognizes him, goes, Larry?
Yeah.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a really wonderful, wonderful page.
Well, yeah, and then what I was getting to was that then after the kidnap attempt happens, she gets a bad headache, and you know, and after a long day and that sort of thing, and she just wants, you know, it to be quiet. And there's a great page of just her laying on the chair with her, you know, holding her hands on her head, and the sun goes down, and the imaginary gorilla who's there is sitting on the floor with his hands on his head, and it's just like so much heart in that page. Yep. You know, like you got just by seeing these two panels, you get, you know, through illustrating the gorilla feeling pain as well, you get a sense of the hurt that she's in. And so like it's every emotion, whether it's humor or pain or anger or bumblingness or confusion, Terry Moore does just like he's a master. He's an absolute master. And then for me, the big revelation from this issue that made me kind of, you know, get very excited is the very last page of the book. He reveals that the Libby who owns the junkyard was actually introduced back in Strangers in Paradise number 22. So this story exists in the Strangers in Paradise universe, which I love.
That was one of the things I wanted to bring up, was how you felt about this being sort of a spinoff book from Strangers in Paradise.
That's great. I love it. A part of me wishes, and I don't know if that's the case with Rachel Rising and with Echo, because those were so specific, but I love the idea of the Terry Moore universe, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I missed that entirely for some reason.
That's a ton of fun.
The thing.
Huh. Yeah. So, you know, I would challenge anybody to tell me another creator who is self-publishing their own comic book on a monthly basis, both in, you know, issue format and in collected editions and all stuff like that, that's still doing it now in 2017.
Well, the landscape is different than when we started the show.
Well, completely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the landscape is
doing it. You'll never see it or hear of it, though. I mean, he's
The landscape is not only different than the 11 years ago when we started this, but the landscape is different the 20 years ago when Terry Moore started doing Strangers in Paradise and all that stuff. So, I mean, I have so much respect for the guy. And I
don't
love
mean
that
there aren't books out there. There certainly are. You go to convention, you see dozens and dozens and dozens. There aren't hardly any in the popular consciousness like there were 11 years ago, like there were 20 years ago.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I feel like maybe something changed, because he kind of said that he wasn't going to do the issues anymore. Like that he sounded like at one point, like he was done with the monthly issues.
Right.
And he's decided to go back to it. So I'm wondering.
I thought he said he couldn't make money off the collections. There was a lot of things he was talking about.
The other way around.
There are a lot of issues with what he's doing. And then the saying he's going to return to Strangers in Paradise, which is great, but also like, we'll see. But, you know, but maybe, you know, also the inspiration, when sometimes you get a story and you got to tell it. Yeah. So, and maybe as opposed to doing as long of a series as he did with Rachel Rising and Echo, maybe this is, 12 issues and done. You know, like, I don't know what his plan for this is, and I don't care. I'm completely on board for the ride.
I'll tell you what was the best part of this issue, just in my own. It's the bit where they're talking about jazz, and then she says Miles Davis, and the last panel, when the gorilla goes into reverence.
Yes.
Well, both of them do. They do it at the same time together.
I know. But just like, I was like, I've never seen.
And the chorus appears. Yeah. You can hear it. That's a movie joke. Yeah. That's a total movie joke that works.
Yeah. No, but I've never seen that panel. And the way that page is played.
Yep.
We're talking about storytelling in that other show you haven't heard yet. But like, that's great storytelling to a different effect. And I really was like, that was a special thing. And
this page is like perfection as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. It's great. Yeah.
That's like when the townspeople reference Randolph Scott and Blazing Saddles.
Yeah. Yep.
And then like Connor had mentioned that last page where that was really the eyebrow raiser, because I was reading it the whole time and I thought, this is pretty good. I'm enjoying this. I like the progression from 1 to 2 to 3. And then the one guy gets sucked up into space. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. That gives us something. Great.
Yeah. So if you're not reading Motor Girl yet, it's the third issue. You can pick it up. You can pick up digitally. It's up on Comixology and all that stuff. Or if your local comic book store is smart enough to be stocking this, if not, ask them to order it, because that will help Terry Moore in this. But it's a balance of lightheartedness with a sense of something is going on, something bigger is going on.
It's classic Terry Moore.
Classic Terry Moore. Yeah, it's great. So I couldn't love it more. So Motor Girl number 3. Great job, Terry Moore. But also a great job probably a runner-up for Pick of the Week for me was Green Lanterns number 15.
Yeah, what was interesting about it is the last time this came out, we were talking, and that was, last week, this morning? I don't remember when the last issue
came out. Yeah, it feels like it, yeah.
We talked about how Jessica finally gained some confidence, and we hoped that maybe that would temper the storytelling a little bit, because it's been focused a lot about her lack of confidence in herself as Green Lantern. But the thing is, she still has anxiety, and anxiety doesn't go away even though you've gained confidence. So she's more confident as a Green Lantern, but this entire issue is a one-shot dealing with her. It's called A Day in the Life, and it's dealing with how she deals with anxiety throughout the day. And I know people, I've known lots of people with real anxiety problems, and it's not something you can just wish away or talk away or whatever. And it's a very unusual one-shot story about a superhero.
Yeah, I thought Sam Humphries did a great job of presenting that problem of anxiety and how it might, you know, kind of affect or, you know, come close to crippling a superhero in this regard, where you've got this great tool of power, but mentally you can't handle it, or mentally you can't, you know, like your ability to have the confidence that you need in order to be that person. You know, it's funny because, you know, we're 15 issues into this run in what feels like maybe 3 weeks. Generally, I'm really impressed by what Sam Humphries has done with this title. I find myself more often than not lamenting the fact that it's Green Lanterns. Mm-hmm. Up until this issue, but at times in the last 14 issues, I felt like, okay, is it Jessica Cruz or is it Simon Bass? You know, like, right. And having them as partners and stuff like that. Yes, it's a different kind of paradigm, but it almost seems like overkill and has been bogged the book down where we could have moved faster. But in this particular case, the idea of having someone to lean on and someone to support, I think, was a key aspect of the story. And the whole story just had a level of maturity that you don't really find in, well, you find it every now and then, but it was nice to see in the pages of something as superhero-y as Green Lanterns, you know?
Right.
My only problem is that unfortunately, the art just doesn't live up to the level of the story. And we're falling back into DC, you know, kind of house style. You know, you've got Tom Derenick who did thumbnails and Miguel Maduncia did the pencils. You know, like it just the art wasn't anything that I got excited about.
It was very workmanlike. It got the job done, but it wasn't exciting or interesting. For sure.
Yeah, like I after I read this issue, I was like, wow, that was really good. It was really insightful. It was really personal. And then my immediate thought is like, wow, imagine if a killer artist had worked on this.
Yeah.
You know, and that unfortunately is where it falls short for me. And that's been the tale of this book, I think, in a lot of the books at DC right now. It's just that the pump and dump, go, 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 two issues a month is it's just hurting on the art side.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. But the characters are great. It's been slightly more of a Jessica Cruz book.
Yes.
But then I guess she's the newer character because Simon Baz was around for a little while before.
Yep.
But she, to me, I feel like I know her better. And I feel like she's more compelling. She was fantastic at the end of Batman. I thought she was very fun.
Yeah. My thought after reading this, I'm like, wow, what if she was just the Green Lantern of Earth? Like, she didn't have, I like the fact that Simon was there for her in this issue and giving her the support because nobody can really understand what she's going through other than another Green Lantern. But, you know, again, after reading it, I was like, wow, what if she was in the driver's seat and she was the Green Lantern of Earth? I think that would be way more compelling. Yeah. Who knows? But I enjoyed it.
I look forward to next issue's Batman team up.
Yeah. That got me a laugh at the end. I like that. That was fun. So I got to give it up to Ed Brubaker for Killer Be Killed #5 for completely just saying, oh, yeah, forget about what happened in issue 4. Here's a new thing that's happening. He just put the fast forward button on this issue, and that I just like the last issue was there was a tense situation that just, and now we skip a couple of months. Yeah, there was with the strip club.
Oh, he got beat up outside the strip club.
But he got beat up. Yeah, yeah. And then
he said nothing came of that.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, all right, cool. Keep the story moving. I like it.
What's interesting is that the end in his letters page essay thing, he said, they plan this to be the longest run of any book they've worked on together.
Really?
Yeah, let me find it. Which is interesting because Fatale went pretty long.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that they're saying that because I got to admit, 5 issues in, and this might be my favorite thing they've done, at least in recent years. You know, like I love this book.
So here's where I am on it. It's good. It's clearly good. I don't know if I like it.
Interesting.
I don't know if I'm just reading it because I read their work. You know what I mean?
Why don't you like it?
Well, there's a nihilism. There's a nihilism to it that I don't think plays well with you, Josh.
There is to a certain extent, but it's also there's the mystery thing. Like, is the demon real or not? And I don't like. None of us like the demon.
I feel like that's not the point, though. I feel like that's just a device.
I know. It's just it's like a niggling thing that is sort of in the back of my mind, and I don't like. I'm reading it and I'm going, this is really good. It's clear, like Sean Phillips doing, he's adjusted his style just a bit, you know, on this sort of from the last series, and it's good. But I don't like see the cover and think, oh, great, new issue of this. I look forward to it.
Oh, when I saw that this was out this week, I was like, yes.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this book. So he says, I'm not sure how long the entire series will run. It's probably going to be the longest thing we've ever done and go in a lot of different directions before it reaches the end. So I guess
and that's why I keep going, because I think we're only a little ways in and he does good things a lot. But then there was also like Captain America was fantastic for a while. And then by the end, you were like, all right, let's move along. Or same with Daredevil, same with this. Yeah. So those are in the back of my mind, too. I don't know.
But we're 5 issues in. I mean, the thing is, what's going on is screwed up, and a lot of issues, you know, with the fact that this kid is now becoming a killer and all this stuff. But I like how we're 5 issues in, and the adventure of it, like, you know, like he's got a mask and he's feeling more comfortable. He's taking the classes, and then he does something completely stupid, and now the cliffhanger is that the cops are there, and how is he going to get out of this?
Yeah. Without going to the next level, which is killing someone who doesn't deserve it.
Right.
You know, he's going to have to shoot the cop. There's no way around it.
And I just think that the way Brubaker's telling the story, you know, from the narrative kind of standpoint, you know, the kind of the first, like he's talking to us. He's telling us this story and jumping around in time and stuff like that. It's just the whole thing to me is just been every issue has been better than the previous one. And I just love the way Sean Phillips draws New York City. It's just, it's great.
I think there's a definite yo-yo thing going on. We're like one issue's like down, and then the other issue's up, and then the one issue's way down, and this one's sort of back up, and then it's very playing with us.
Yeah. Yes.
That was a bad sentence, but it's a Trumpian sentence. It's very playing with us comics, but that's sort of the feeling, and it's weird. Like this was the up issue, and like the other one was so like everything's horrible. I've lost everything, and. It's very melodramatic, not necessarily in a bad way. It's interesting.
I mean, and the thing is that, like, if you look at when the book started, and it started in winter, and now the book has progressed to the point where I get the sense it's like spring or summer. You know, you got a seasonal effectiveness going on here, where like the main character is a little more upbeat in this issue than where it was so dire when it began, and it's sunnier on the page, you know. So like, I think that's an interesting angle as well too.
Oh, only slightly, really. He's he's depressed because the girl he loved is no longer loves him, and
yeah,
it's not like things are great. He's not skipping his way down the sidewalk at this point.
True, fair enough. Yeah,
but he's got other stuff to pay attention to.
Yeah.
You know who is skipping his way down the sidewalk?
Who?
Batman.
Fine, Tom King. Fine. You were right.
Yeah, that's
wrong.
Right, Connor.
I was wrong. I criticized issue 14 slightly because I thought it would work better as a one-shot instead of a two-part story. This is part two of the rooftop story with Catwoman and Batman, and fine.
This was almost better.
It was so great.
Fine. I got to like page 5, and I just started laughing. It's like, okay, fine. Okay, good. I concede. where Batman and Catwoman are in post-coital bliss on the roof, and she's talking about her dream, I guess, and he's talking about his dream, or however, whatever the conversation is referenced to, and hers is about Batman Year One, and his is about the first time they met in the old Golden Age comics, and I will fall for that trick every time.
Yeah.
I will fall hook, line, and sinker for that trip.
Hook, line, and sinker. There you go. How do you get Connor? Do this.
A couple of accolades, I think, out of this. Now, I've known Mitch Garrett's work for a long time. This is really good.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good Mitch Garrett's work. And we've seen a lot of great work out of him, but it's...
Well, look at that page 5. He does 3 different art styles on one page.
Yeah, he definitely stretched himself for this one and really, like, put it all on the page, I thought. And this isn't a guy who I think was lazier or anything, but it was a little extra to be like, I know this is a special moment for us, so let's do really well. Then the other side of it, like, I don't understand how Tom King is getting this work, because he's writing books. It's like he's writing books for us. Like, he really is. Like,
we are not the widespread audience.
That's what I'm saying. Like he's writing books for adults that are not super dark. They're just a bit cerebral, not so much that it's esoteric, and it's a bit. He doesn't give you everything. Like, you have to work a little bit. He's going to put it all there, and you can see it's not confusing or anything, but he's not he's not spoon feeding you anything. You're just sort of going along with this experience, and it seems it's very different from everything that seems to be happening at Marvel. It's great.
And it's funny because it confesses to the fact of who's really reading these books.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So that's a good observation, Josh. Good job.
Yeah.
He's getting real close to that animated series tone, but in a little more sophisticated. And that was a very sophisticated show, but this is a little more adult-leaning. I mean, you're not going to Batman stabbed in the neck on the cartoon, but he's riding that wave right in the middle, and it's very good.
Yeah.
It's really good. Like, yeah. I really enjoyed that Batman issue.
You know what? Between this and Green Lanterns, which we just talked about, I think the case is being made for, and I'm a trade reader, but let's do some smaller arcs.
Yeah. Two issues
is
fun,
yeah. Say that I'm a traitor.
I'm a traitor. I mean, you know, you can still have a trade with small arcs in it. You can have two arcs in a trade, yeah, or three arcs in a trade.
Yeah, this is what comics used to do. There used to be little one-shots, little two-issue ones, little, you know, here and there that are still fun to read. And we've almost fallen too much into the designing for the trade kind of standpoint, you know?
Yeah. Did either of you guys read Monsters Unleashed number one?
No, I did.
Frankly, I was surprised to see you put it on the.
I wasn't going to, but I had a whole lot of fun reading.
I read it on a lark because, you know, it's Cullen Bunn writing it with Steve McNiven on art, yeah, and they've been pushing this super hard. And I was like, all right, first issue, I'll take a stab. And when I got to the end of it, I was like, oh wow, actually that was a lot of fun,
wasn't it? Yeah. I had no expectations. I really didn't know. I don't read the news. So I don't know it's a thing. I was like, oh, it's like a whole event. And even if I don't read any of that, I'll give it a shot. But like, it was a really fun. You know what it was? In comparison to that Monsters event that they did in Batman, this was way more fun. And it may be just because I'm a little closer to the Marvel monsters. It's basically a bunch of Kirby monsters drawn by Steve McNiven, and they're attacking all over the world, and all the heroes are like, what's going on?
Yeah, yeah. This actually reminded me a lot of like a Atlantis Attacks kind of like late 80s event book, you know, like in the annuals or whatever, where, you know, throughout this whole book, there's all these monsters of the Fing Fang Foom level who are either emerging from Earth or landing on Earth. And you've got the Avengers responding. You've got the X-Men. You've got the Champions. It's like this little kind of tour of the Marvel Universe. You know, it's really encompassing a lot of the Inhumans, you know, whatever, you know, the Guardians of the Galaxy, like all around the world. Everyone's kind of responding to these big monsters and dealing with it. And then at the very end of the issue, and here's the spoilers, that there's a little boy who has been, you know, who's been drawing. And he walks outside and he goes into the woods and there's Fing Fang Foom and three other monsters going, hey, whatever you think you're doing, you're not
going to knock it off.
Yeah, by summoning us is dangerous. And like, it was a great cliffhanger, and I'm going to read this whole series. It seemed fun.
Is there a character whose name is more fun to say than Fing Fang Foom?
None. He's the best.
There might be. I think I need to check the roles of the 60s comics. I think there could be up there. There's others on the same level anyway. And it was just fun seeing that last page was just like McNiven doing Kirby monsters. Yeah. I was like, it looks great.
It really did. Yeah, it really does look great. This was a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, it was super fun. It was just outright all that sophisticated stuff we were just talking about before. Doesn't matter. It was fun.
Cool. Know what else is fun, Josh?
Supporting your favorite podcast about comic books or favorite podcast in general. If you like what we do, you should go over to ifanboy.com/support. There you're going to find a link to our Amazon affiliate page. And when you click on it, it will look just like regular Amazon, but it ain't. It's Amazon. When you make purchases, a little bit of that purchase goes to us. It doesn't cost you anything extra. Takes a little bit off of Amazon's cut, and we're totally fine with that. But a lot of people use that over the holiday for shopping, and that is a big deal for us. So thanks very much. Keep doing that all year. Keep that link bookmarked. Also, there are direct donations via PayPal or Patreon. We'll go real quickly on PayPal. If you just if you have like $1 million and you need to get rid of it. ifanboy.com/support. But otherwise, if you'd like to support us, you can go to patreon.com/ifanboy, where the patrons are making a difference. A lot of stuff is coming back. We're doing the booksplodes, we're doing the talksplodes, we get to do the really fun, just the Patreon superpower naming in the shows, and we are now going to be making t-shirts again.
We had our big meeting last week about it. We're planning our shirts.
We did, yep. And we've had even more patrons come on this week, further cementing the fact that we not only hit the goal, but have passed it, and we're already looking out to the next one. So thank you, patrons, for stepping up for that.
You know, and the idea is, you know, you like this thing. It's a big part of your comic book world and your hobby and all the stuff you enjoy. And every Sunday or Monday morning, it's part of your routine that goes along with your comics. And, you know, if you're paying $3, $4 a comic, you know, it seems like it'd be a good value to help support this too. And those of you who do, we really, really appreciate it. It will, of course, always continue to be free.
Yes.
So that
and
is
important.
All.
And important to note, the patrons who have signed up in the past couple of months who are due rewards at the $5 and higher, we're actually going to give you a comic and a bunch of some other cool, fun stuff. Those packages are coming. You should be getting them hopefully by the end of the month. So keep an eye out.
Excellent.
All right, moving on. Invincible Iron Man number 3 by Bendis and Stefano Caselli on art. I actually really liked this issue.
I really enjoyed it.
I really enjoyed it. Yeah, it was like with the exception of we haven't been a while, but exception of a blatant got this.
There's a bad one.
There's a bad one.
There was a bunch this week. There was a bunch.
Yeah, but this was a bad one. It's like, so you got this? It's got. Okay, whatever, yep. Bendis.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
It was so bad, broke our rule of not talking about that anymore.
It really did. Yeah.
I read the Doom one before this, and then I read this one.
Yep.
And the Doom one is
did the Doom one come out this week?
No.
I may have just been catching up on.
Yeah, it didn't come out this week. Yeah, right.
Doesn't matter. The point was, I read that one, which is interesting. It's not bad. I don't know that I really. Then I read this one. I was like, oh, that was really fun. Like, I just at the end of it, I found myself like with that pleasant. Like, oh, that was nice. I enjoyed doing that. I really enjoyed the Pepper Riri conversation and sort of the weirdness that is the Tony Stark AI, which is a way to keep him in the book without him being in the book.
Yep.
And I like the character. I like the whole like. I like what's going on back with Mary Jane. And have we known about this Tony Stark mother thing?
That was
his international Tony Stark book.
That was last year. Yeah, yeah. When they revealed that Tony was adopted, and now we find out he's his birth mother now. So yeah,
it just felt really freewheeling. I think in cool. a good way.
Good.
Yeah.
Moving on, the Clone Conspiracy number 4. Beautiful art. Jim Chung's amazing. Story's a mess. But on a scale of 1 being Electro and 10 being Lady Electro, I was so excited to see Electro in this book, and I just felt like I needed to mention that.
Was he in the classic costume?
So Electro is now Lady Electro, and she is one of Jackal's little goons and has been in the room with Doc Ock in this book. But she is Lady Electro in the classic Electro, you know, with the lightning bolts come mask. And oh, it's a great costume. It's just a great costume. So 10s across the board for Electro this week.
The best thing about that joke last week was that the scale can mean anything.
Yes.
And it really confused a lot of people. So we got a lot of emails asking us questions using that scale, and they were all over the map, and it was wonderful to read.
I love it. Please continue. It's fantastic.
Trinity number 5. I was reading this wondering why I was enjoying the art so much, and not simply because it's Francis Manapal, who was great, but I realized that he doesn't give a shit about Batman's new costume. Other than just drawing the new emblem on his chest, he's just drawing him in the old costume. It was about halfway of the book. I was like, why does Batman look so awesome? Oh, right, because he doesn't have those dumbass knee pads or those lines all over his torso or anything extraneous. He just looks like the old Batman with the new emblem on his chest. And I thought, let's do that.
Now, what's funny about this book is that, like, I it's beautiful. It's gorgeous. But, like, I was like, oh, Poison Ivy. I thought it was really cool to see Mongol, and I thought the little dream world that they're stuck in was cool, and the different iterations of Superman, and like Manapul's clearly having, like, this is him having fun in the DC universe. But like, okay, so you've got the big three and you're having fun, so Poison Ivy?
That's why I love it, because it's not something you'd ever think of.
Right.
Right? And so you'd think, okay, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman could take out Poison Ivy real easily, but they found a way to make it not so easy, and that's what I liked about it. But I also liked the art so much.
Yeah, it's just amazing.
Speaking of good art,
yeah, Black Hammer Giant Size Annual number 1. So 6 issues in on Black Hammer, they decided to do an annual. Okay, cool. Especially when it's, and this could have been subtitled Jeff Lemire and the Gang. Because this is pretty much a parade of all of Jeff Lemire's friends and collaborators.
Canadians.
Yeah, exactly. So, which is not a bad thing when you've got a lineup like Nate Powell, Matt Kent, Dustin Nguyen, Mike Allred, Emmy Lennox, Ray Fox. I mean, like with colors by Dave Stewart. Like this is a tour de force.
This issue was great.
Letters by Todd Klein.
He's been doing the letters on the book the whole time. Yeah.
I know. I just want to make sure he's.
I've been loving the series, but I thought this was a great issue in which we got to learn a little bit of the backstory on some of these characters that we haven't
really. It was a really cool device by having the colonel, the guy with the beard, the space cadet kind of going into space and looking through time at a little kind of little mini story of each of the characters. And the one with where he meets himself at the end, I thought was great. And I just love the world of Black Hammer.
It's a really good book. This could have been just a regular issue. It's needed. If you skip this because it's an annual and you're reading the series, you need to read this issue.
Yeah.
You need to get correct. So last week you guys asked if I was going to read Spider-Gwen.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, I did.
Wow.
That's kind of the end of my review. I read it.
Well, I continued the crossover with Miles Morales Spider-Man.
Yeah, I mean, what happened with me is that, like, I was like the two characters talking to each other was fine. I actually was pretty well done and it was pretty fun, except I didn't know who anyone was talking about. Meaning, like, when they would talk about somebody, I was like, is this the one I know or is this someone I don't know? So, like, when Matt Murdock showed, neither of you read it, but Matt Murdock showed up.
I read it.
Oh, you did? Yeah. So, when Matt Murdock showed up and I was like, I didn't know, I was like, well, I see a jerk, Matt Murdock.
Yeah.
Which is not bad. I'm just not familiar with it. So right. In terms of like a crossover, it was a little hard to get acclimated because all the characters have the same names. So they talk about Spider-Woman. They don't mean the Spider-Woman that I think of as Spider-Woman.
Right.
What? So what happened so that someone like me who didn't read it will know?
Nothing.
He met his alternate. He met his alternate universe father.
Yeah. So he went over to Spider-Gwen's universe to find his dad from the S.H.I.E.L.D. mission. Him and Spider-Gwen lamented a lot. His phone doesn't work. They ran into alternate universe Matt Murdock, who's very different. And then there was some nightclub where people dress up like superheroes, which is a trope we've seen before. And then the climax was he sees the alternate universe version of his dad, and of which he goes, "Dad," which I thought wasn't very strategically smart.
Well, that's kind of his whole thing.
Yeah. But it wasn't bad. I mean, it wasn't bad. I mean, it's definitely telling the story. But yeah, it's like, I did like one of the devices they've been doing in this series has been they've been doing the little official handbooks of the Marvel Universe guides at the back of it to give you more information on these characters who we know by name, but they're different in this universe. And they did this for Miles, which I thought was a cute little touch.
This occurred to me. This is apropos of that. What was that book that DC put out that had all the different DC Earths listed? Remember that book? Remember they had like the New Frontier Earth and
Who's Who or
no?
Was
no,
it,
the, it was recently.
It Grant Morrison?
Oh, I have no idea.
I was thinking about that while I was reading Superman this week. I want to find that book so I can reference all these characters. Anyway, continue.
If you know, please get in touch and let Connor know.
Yeah.
Didn't Grant Morrison do that as part of Multiversity?
It could have been Multiversity. It might have been in Multiversity.
I think it was involved in there somehow.
Okay. That makes more sense. So. Real quickly, a little pop into Star Wars corner is Dr. Aphra number 3 by Kieran Gillen and art by Kev Walker came out. And I just thought this was interesting for two points. Well, first, Josh, are you reading this book?
I am.
Okay, cool. One is that I really like the side plot of the Wookiee, the who I can't say his name, Black Kyrgyzstan, whatever. Just basically him against the Empire on Yavin 4, like every couple of pages was fun.
Yeah.
But also, this is the first book, at least in the Marvel continuity, I see that has brought in the events of Rogue One into the comics, which, you know, like referring to what happened on Jedha and all that sort of stuff. So I was like, oh, there you go. There's a retcon in action.
Yes, which means he knew. It's funny because I keep forgetting that it's Kev Walker on this. So every once in a while, I'm like, this looks great. Who's drawing this? Oh, it's Kev Walker. And then, like, who's drawing this? Oh, man, that's good.
Yeah, that's good. I'm continuing to really enjoy this character and these adventures. So good job, Kieran. Yep. All right. Well, before we get to the rating segment of the program, we want to bring you a message brought to you by Bombas. And Bombas are socks that are engineered and designed to look, feel, and perform better. Bombas are all about comfort. And let me tell you, I'm telling you this firsthand as I am literally wearing a pair of Bombas socks as I read this. For years, I literally have bought the same brand of socks for 25 years, and Bombas has converted me, and so I'm couldn't be happier to spread the
gospel. Josh, are we surprised?
I have to add this.
What?
Like, this is not a thing. I just remember, like, it was like a year or so ago that Ron was just like, I'm not happy with my socks.
Yes.
And we were like, what are your socks? He's like, they're just regular tube socks. We're just like, ah.
Come on. You
know, come on, man.
So
I'm really glad that you found a solution to that.
Yeah, and I tried different sock providers. You know, I sampled around. I went online. There's a whole bunch of them online now, and there's all these different things. But listen, Bombas are the ones that have made an impact on me and are staying. They're actually made with this long staple Pima cotton that is super soft and breathable, which I love. I like a soft sock. They're really innovative, actually. They've got the middle, the arch section. They've got, like, this honeycomb stitch system that actually, you know, that not only provides support to your arches but also keeps the sock on, which is good. If you get their ankle socks, they come with a little blister pet tab to keep from your shoes rubbing against your heel, which is something, you know. They've got a great Y-stitched heel that kind of forms a natural cup around your heel. Like, they just fit great. And they also, the one thing I can't stand is that they don't have that annoying seam that runs across your toes. right? They've got a nice link toe seam that just works perfectly. Listen, they're great, and not only are they great, but they're doing great things. First off, they have 100% happiness guarantee, so if you don't love these socks, you'll get your money back. But not only that, in addition to making the most comfortable socks, they also are donating a pair of socks for every pair you purchase to those in need. Socks are actually the most requested item in homeless shelters, and Bombas has donated almost 1 million pairs to date. So they're doing good things for the world, which is important in these times. So go to getbombas.com/ifanboy. That's GETBOMBAS.com/ifanboy. And you'll get 20% off your first purchase of 4 or more pairs, plus free shipping. And for when you buy those 4 pairs, they will donate 4 pairs to those in need. So do good in the world and be comfortable while doing it. Go to getbombas.com/ifanboy.
All right. I need new gym socks.
Check them out. They're worth it.
Yeah.
All right. Ratings.
Ratings. So ratings. As we said before, we've been doing ratings for the DC Rebirth books. I don't know why. It's just something we do. We can't stop. And this month has been the Justice League of America books. This is the third one. Justice League of America, Rebirth, number one. A story by Steve Orlando, art by Stephen Byrne. Steve Orlando's been – he's a co-writer on this one.
He didn't. I noted that the previous books were co-written by Jody Hauser, but this one was only written by Steve Orlando, probably related to the subject matter of the characters.
Right. So this is the Ray. It was fine.
It was fine.
I would even go slightly less than fine.
Yeah, it was a little ham-handed. Wow.
Little ham-handed.
Get it. First of all, I actually don't know anything about this character for some reason. I've seen him here and there, but I really don't know anything about him. And the story didn't make sense to me. The power of the guy or his power disease, whatever it is he has, that's fine. But like the link to his father wasn't clear. The fact that he ran into the kid who he was writing to, he thought like it just
This tried to do a lot in a small page count.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think it suffered because of that. Because to your point, like this falls in the category of these Rebirth books, which is this is a origin book. This is you don't know anything about the Ray, pick it up, and now you'll know about him. And he's a kid that lives in the dark because he has some sort of power or something. But they don't, like to your point, Josh, they don't explain how or why or what.
Yeah. You know, I've been reading comics with the Ray in them since the 90s, and I don't really know much about the Ray either.
Yeah, yeah. So you had a blank slate, but I think that they tried to do too much. Purely just the reason why he's living at home in the dark and what the powers are is challenging enough. But then you add in the complicated father relationship, the complicated friendship relationship, the loneliness, the isolation, and then you layer in that they're making the character gay and his friend is gay. And I see what Steve Orlando's trying to do there with the feeling of isolation of that compared with the feeling of isolation because you have these powers. And that's I get where the heart of it is coming from. I just think it fumbled in the execution.
We don't know a lot about him. We don't know a lot about him as a. It all happened very quickly.
Yes.
He was a thing where he kept saying, like, it's hard when you can't see a guy, or like, and I was like, is he looking for dudes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a little. I was like, are they trying to say this character's gay?
That's exactly what it was. Yeah.
Was that what they were doing though?
He's at the end of on a date with a guy at the movies.
I wasn't even sure that was him.
Yeah, they're the hair.
I was like, who are these people? And then he had a costume all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was the worst one.
Missing pages.
It was the worst one we've read so far.
Yeah, it feels like it was missing pages, Josh. That's very good.
Yeah.
Also, I didn't think the art was very good.
I thought there were glimmers of potential with the art, but I agree with you that it wasn't all completely there.
Basic style of the art.
Yeah.
It's sort of McKelvey-esque.
Yeah. Very McKelvey-esque. I love the character design. I love the black and yellow kind of combination when he makes the kind of Centurion helmet, that was kind of cool. But I don't know how he does that. And then sometimes his costume is black and yellow in some places, but not in others. He can turn invisible, but he can turn other people invisible. I don't understand what the power set is. So it made it hard to kind of know what was going on,
Ratings.
Also, he has a great jacket when he's the Ray that I don't know where he got it because before that he didn't have this jacket. Then he appears and he has a jacket.
One of the new X-Men.
Yeah, yeah. He does look like one of the new X-Men.
Ratings.
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 2.5.
I'll give it a 3.
2.
All right. Sticking with it.
Well,
no.
This is the same question every week.
Yeah, I know, but I'm
there's nothing to stick with.
They're not selling me this book that they're all.
Well, no, he's gonna be in Justice League of America. Yeah, yeah. So.
Not selling me that book.
No.
All right.
Moving on. So as we said, if you go to patreon.com/ifanboy, and you become a patron at any level, you get to vote on a book to include in the show, the patron pick. This week, the overwhelming pick was Curse Words, number one, from Charles Soule, Ryan Brown, published by Image Comics.
And first off, I want to thank the patrons for not repeating last week, because for a moment I'm like, oh, if they pick this WWE book, I might walk.
If you're a patron and you want to see the voting, we posted the top five vote getters on our patron page, which you can only see if you're a patron. So you can check that out.
To further reiterate that, like last week, we posted last week's results. We're only going to post the books. We're going to post the top five, and they have to get at least two votes or more, because we get a lot of books that just get one, right?
Correct. So this is Curse Words, story of a wizard-esque character in our world who has come to conquer. He is the sort of herald of a stronger being, and he's come to Earth to set the stage for a conquering, but he decides Earth's pretty groovy, and he's going to hang out and not conquer, and that leads to some problems. What are our thoughts?
Overall, I like this, but I got a real problem. And Connor, do you know the real problem?
Well, for my mind, there could be a host of them you're choosing from.
Well, for me, the real problem is that clearly this story takes place in New York, and I get that it's a fantasy world or whatever, but a major battle happens on what is clearly Citi Field, and yet the baseball players and all the fans have black and yellow.
Oh.
Black and white hats and shirts, which would indicate the Yankees. And got a real problem.
Maybe there's an interleague game going on.
No, I don't know.
Maybe there was a problem in the Bronx, and they had to use the stadium. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Maybe they had to fumigate. You know, they put the giant cover over the stadium in the Bronx, and they had to play their home games in Queens.
It could be like when the pieces of the Yankee Stadium were falling apart, and the Yankees played at Shea. Yeah, okay,
there you go. And for their trouble, they were disappeared.
Yes, they were disappeared. I thought this was wacky fun. I mean, I love Ryan Brown, Brownie. I think he's great. And I enjoy him, the energy he puts in.
I like the middle section where he decides Earth's cool, is going to hang out. And then that was about it.
Yeah. Josh?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's one of those things like I was like, I think this was pretty good, but I don't know that it's for me. Like, I don't know if it was saying something I was terribly interested in hearing.
Right.
That sort of makes sense. Like, I got it. I liked it. I liked it more as I went through it than I did at first. It had sort of elements of a little bit of Birthright almost. It was actually very similar to that.
Yeah. Yes.
In a way.
And like a reverse
Maybe that
Birthright,
was
kind of.
Part of that familiarity. And it's interesting because, like, so I was super into God Hates Astronauts for a while. And then I was like, all right, that's enough.
Right.
Because, like, the jokes were sort of always wacky and insane all the time. And I just was, once I'd had enough of it, I was like, I'd had enough of it. So this is like, I think I was expecting it to be both wackier and more, I don't know. Like, I'm having a hard time melding the art and story a little bit.
Right.
But that might just be too much prejudice of what I expect of them.
Charles Soule has a lot of ideas. He's very prolific.
Yes.
He's one of the fastest writers in comics. Maybe not all his ideas are what I want to read. That's fine.
Yeah, I think that's a little bit. I think it's a lot of that. It's very similar to what I was talking about with Brubaker earlier. It was just like, you know, I'm fine with it, but I don't know if this is. And I'm getting a lot better this year at just being like, I don't think I'm going to read that because it's not the thing I want to read. It's not because it's bad, but I don't know. Like, I was a little bothered. I wasn't sure if we were supposed to take it a little seriously or not seriously. So when he shrinks the whole stadium and then gets rid of everybody, I'm like, well, aren't people going to know about that?
Well, I think that's the thing is that he's.
That's it. Yeah, they tease that. Yeah.
Right. So, like.
They tease that for the next issue.
That seems wacky to me.
Yeah.
So it seems like there should have been more wacky.
Well, is it wacky or did he just kill those innocent people? Is that not wacky?
That's the question.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the.
Like I need another issue to determine whether I like this or not.
Yeah.
Right.
Whether it's for me.
Ron, right. Is this pitcher on a lot of steroids?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, did he get this? Wasn't there a page before where he got like special magic to make
the pitcher, the pitcher on the Yankees who's pitching
pitcher,
in Queens.
Pitcher, I know. Pitcher, yes.
The pitcher got
it's,
magic.
It's Roger Clemens. So, all right, ratings.
Three.
Sticking with it.
I have too many books, so no.
depends on the week.
Yeah, I'm going to read the next one.
Okay.
All right.
So go to patreon.com/ifanboy. Sign up, become a patron, and you can vote every week on the patron pick. Thanks, everybody who participated.
And something else you get when you're a patron at patreon.com/ifanboy is you get a dumb superpower. Every week we bestow dumb or awesome, depending on your point of view, superpowers to our patrons. This week, Josh, you're kicking it off.
I just want to go ahead and point it in one of the alleys. He bestows the baseball player in an NY hat with big muscles.
Right, yeah.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. Yes, that's right.
So he's specifically large.
So he is on PEDs. He's not getting in the Hall of Fame, that dude.
It's still Roger Clemens, and he goes, whatever. Okay.
Maybe he did do that.
Kieran Clarkin, who hates Kieran Culkin deeply. I don't know if it's a blessing or a curse, but he has parrot feet.
Oh, fuck you. I have a feet-related one. I got to change it now.
He has the feet of parrots. So, you know, can't wear shoes, but gets a pretty good grip.
Well, no, could he hide the shoes? I mean, could he get shoes that fit the parrot feet?
I mean, I suppose, but at least you're talking about a custom bill.
You're talking about giant clown shoes.
He's not going to walk around barefooted, footed, bare clawed.
Parrots do.
Well, yeah, but yeah. All right.
I mean, at the least, if he's in the Northeast, it might necessitate a move.
Yeah.
But he's got parrot feet. Okay. They're proportional to his body, but they're parrot feet.
You know what? I'm sticking with mine. I don't care if we get
Please
two
do.
Feet one.
All right, Connor, you're up. You're up. Step up.
Wakanda Robertson, he has two left feet.
All right. Is that metaphorical?
No.
He literally has two left feet. Okay.
Which makes it doubly expensive to buy shoes.
Does that actually affect their ability to dance?
I think it would affect his ability to stand.
Absolutely. All right. John Zimmerman. I want to thank John Zimmerman for being a patron of iFanboy. And John has the amazing ability of grout.
What does that mean?
He's good at it, or he just produces grout?
Move on.
Just grout. His fingers put out grout, and he can help grout tubs and sinks and things like that.
I could really use him. This is funny because you know, sometimes we think these powers reflect our own needs, but I got a whole grout issue I need. He could definitely, I could.
Yeah.
James, come over.
Can he also do caulking?
John.
Caulking? John. Can he do caulking?
Sure. Caulking, yeah, grout and caulk. Yeah, no, what is actually coming out is caulk. He's a caulk man. the grouter, caulk man.
The caulk man.
I'm really glad that after almost 40 years on this earth, I found my calling.
He's a cocksmith.
It's amazing.
He's a cocksmith.
All he needed to do was say a word, too, and I was like, you've got me. I'm in.
I know. I really like the one-word powers. I don't want to go to the well too much of that, but
play the grout instrument you can play.
Yep, exactly. All right, Josh, you're up.
James Wright, he is a completely sealed system. He works as an independent bioentity. He doesn't take in anything. He doesn't put anything out.
Interesting.
No eating, breathing.
But can he? Can he enjoy truffle pasta or no?
No.
Oh, so he cannot eat.
Is his throat blocked up?
It's just there's no. It's like a hole. You could put it in there, but you'd have to empty him like a garbage can.
How does he live? How does he breathe?
He's a completely sealed system. Like imagine like a fish tank that sort of just all supports itself with the plants and the fauna and the air. You know, the sealed sort of, he's like a biodome.
Interesting.
Yeah. There's benefits.
Yeah. He could, poison gas attack. He can just go out there and.
Yeah, can just be like, I'm going to go out underwater now. Doesn't matter. He can do whatever he wants.
Huh.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, then.
Completely sealed system.
Okay. All right, so go to patreon.com/ifanboy where you can sign up to become a patron and you can get your special power today.
Let's do one quick email. Greg B.
Well, not today. Well, not today. You'll get it next episode.
Or next time. Right. Sometime in the future.
Yeah.
Greg B. from Oakland asks, are the X-Men still relatable? I just read IVX number 2, and the X-Men are acting out of character again. Take a drink. And it got me thinking, are they still relevant? Been thinking about this since right before Secret Wars 3, or New Secret Wars, whatever that was. At the moment, I can't quite say the X-Men are even entertaining at this point, so let's stick to relevant. With a lot of non-mainstream characters heading books to various degrees of success, do we still need the X-Men? If you want to trace my fandom for context, I'm 34. My older sister tried to get me into comic books, but it didn't take until the stupid X-Men 92 show. I've been reading a wide range of comic books since.
he's right. The X-Men aren't relatable. I mean, the X-Men used to represent
the other,
that the other, like that, you know, and now it's become this weird amalgam of the other, but also individuality, but also as, kind of hive mindy kind of approach. Like, they're floating out there in the ether, and their relevancy has gotten, I mean, it kills me to say this because they're what I connected with, but it's a different world now.
I don't think they know what the hell to do with the X-Men.
Yeah, exactly.
I've been reading them pretty regularly the last 10 years. I read all new X-Men and Extraordinary X-Men. IVX, the book. I just don't think they know what to do with them. All they seem to do with them is make them militant, and they're either attacking the Avengers or they're attacking the Inhumans. I don't think anyone at Marvel has any idea what to do with the X-Men, and I don't know how much of that's business related or what. We know that there's some business related problems with the X-Men, but from a story standpoint, I just don't think they know what to do.
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree. I think that they're, you know, and this is, and I don't know, and I don't know how much of a, this is a byproduct of the movie issue and the Fox, you know, all that sort of stuff. And so they haven't really thought about it, or if it's a character concept running its course or whatnot, or an amalgam of both of them. But yeah, where, you know, they, if you looked at the X-Men's mandate, it was, you know, heroes in a world that fears and hates them.
Yeah.
You know, like that's what it was, you know, and I always think of that shot, that great shot in Marvel's of the red light of Cyclops' visor and the broken wall and the crowd around him, you know, kind of, you know, helping people who hate them, you know, and I don't know if that carries anymore. And I don't know what the right positioning of it is, you know, like I'm not a writer. I don't know. It's a tough one. It's a definitely tough one because I think that they, in this world of representation and acceptance and all stuff like that, I think you could very well weave the X-Men right in there, but they've chosen to weave the Inhumans instead.
I don't know. I just, I mean, yeah. The part of it I think he mentions is that, you know, the other is, at the time the X-Men were created, most superheroes were straight white men. So the other was the X-Men. Now the other is mainstream. So what does it leave the X-Men? And I don't know that they know what to do with them other than to have them just be angry at everybody all the time. Agreed. When's the last time you read like a classic X-Men story where you thought, wow, that is pure X-Men. That is classic X-Men.
Yeah. Ages.
Yeah. I don't know. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
I haven't even read an X-Men story in forever just because I've heard zero reasons from anybody that I should do so.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not wrong.
Not wrong. All right. Well, thanks for writing in, Greg, and bumming me out, man. You can email us. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. Send in your question. Let us know who you are, where you're from. And if you want to send in an audio file, like an MP3 or something like that, we'd love to play your voicemails and that sort of thing. So that'd be cool, too. So do that.
So this week we have coming up, as we alluded to, Booksplode with the Stuart and Catherine Immonen book, Russian Olive to Red King. Which is a graphic novel from Ad House Books. I think that'll be out about midweek.
Midweek, Wednesday or Thursday.
Yeah. So you have a little time to read it beforehand. If you would like to join in you can talk. We won't hear you. So you could join the discussion in that way, or just post, or just have relevant thoughts to what we're talking about. And then we'll have another Talksplode next month, thanks to the patrons who we also discussed earlier.
And thanks to them as well. We do the monthly patron hangout. That's where the three of us get together for about an hour a month, and we hang out with the patrons on video chat, and we talk. And last one was in December. We did a lot of holiday talk, and this one is the first one for January is January 30th.
Technically still January.
Mark your calendar right under the wire, January 30th. It'll be Monday. It'll be 6:30 Pacific, 9:30 Eastern. We'll post the information as we get closer to it. But if you're a patron, mark your calendar for the January hangout, January 30th.
And if you're looking for another podcast to listen to, check out my other podcast that just recently launched. Although now we're like 10 episodes in, so maybe we haven't recently launched. But check out Damn Fine Podcast, where me and Tom Merritt are reviewing Twin Peaks leading up to season 3. You can go to damnfinepodcast.com where you can subscribe there. Connor was on a recent episode. We got some more guests coming up. It's a fun time. So if you like Twin Peaks, check that out, please.
And you can head over to ifanboy.com. You can check out all of our other podcasts, the previous 567 episodes, and then the hundreds of satellite episodes that we have done, and all the video shows. A lot of stuff there. Like, it's in the hundreds of things. And we've been hearing a lot of people lately who have been like going back and listening to them again.
Well, now they're all in the feed, so you can.
Because it was a simpler time. you can also go like us on Facebook.com/iFanboy and follow us at iFanboy on Twitter and find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out on both of those places. And of course, you can follow us individually at Jay Flanagan, at RonXO, and at CS Kilpatrick on Twitter and Instagram.
And if you like the show, write a review on iTunes, please. It takes not too long, a few minutes to write a review, even less to do a star rating. This is what happens when I start looking at other things while Josh is talking and I don't know what I'm talking about. Write a review on iTunes, leave a star rating for any podcast you listen to. It's the easiest way to help spread the word and get people to listen to it. So thank you very much. Everybody does that.
Yeah. All right. So that's going to wrap it up this week.
That was Ron looking at something else while we were talking.
It was.
Yeah. We care. Yeah, patrons. Go ahead. Give us... Donate. We'll pay it some attention.
It's going to wrap it up. Until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
Oh, I'm Josh. Sorry.
My hands are shaking. Hands are shaking. Boxes are crawling all over me. My hands are shaking. Hands are shaking. Boxes are crawling all over me. Son of a bitch!
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, like, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.